This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A new farm bill in the House ties food assistance to work. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson in for David Brancaccio. Every 5 years or so, the Farm Bill comes up for renewal. It sets the country's food and agriculture policy. It has support for farmers like farm subsidies and crop insurance. But about 80% of its funding is related to SNAP benefits, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, commonly referred to as food stamps. House Republicans want to add a work requirement for SNAP recipients. So adults aged 18 to 59 will have to work or enroll in job training at least 20 hours a week, with some exceptions. Here with us to discuss is Representative Glenn Thompson, Republican from Pennsylvania. He's also vice chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. Congressman, good to talk to you.
Tracy, good to talk with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
So, Congressman, I want to ask you about changes to SNAP in this bill. The bill imposes stricter work requirements. What's the goal here?
These work requirements and everything within the nutrition title of the Farm Bill, it's not going to affect 65% of the individuals who are currently on the SNAP programs. And 65% of folks are either over the age of 65 and older, under 18, or living with a disability. These workforce solutions wouldn't apply to those folks. They just need food security. Nothing's changing for them. But 35% of the individuals, they're current participants, are there because of financial reasons. They're there because of underemployment, unemployment. You know, we're going to provide them a pathway to opportunity to be able to get whether it's a little bit of training, some case management, some soft skills assistance. We're going to build on existing infrastructure to do that.
So everyone except for the exempted categories that you mentioned would have to work at least 20 hours a week.
Or engage in some type of workforce training.
So let me tell you about some of the criticism we've heard so far about this. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said that these workforce requirements are nothing but a cynical Trojan horse to take away SNAP from millions of hungry families. What do you say to the idea that this might push people out of the program?
This doesn't take anybody out of SNAP. We don't do that to anyone. Now, someone can elect not to enroll in SNAP. You know, if you're able-bodied and you're one of those individuals that I described among those 35% that is there because of usually temporary economic reasons, I think you would welcome an opportunity, better access to more effective skills-based education to get a job, you know, to get a better job. And in fact, we improved the SNAP benefits through the healthy choices, through the FINNE program, through our increased investment in food banks. We're actually improving benefits. At the same time, we're providing a pathway to opportunity.
And moving away from SNAP, we've heard from farmers who are, you know, just getting by. They're worried about increased trade pressure from tensions with China, that might really hurt them or even push them out of business. Is there anything in this bill for them?
Yes, there is. We do have a title here that does include resources that are important for trade. It's called the MAP program. These are resources we use to help our farmers market their commodities in foreign countries so that we can achieve those markets. We help our farmers economically by having those markets, not just to fill the stomachs of Americans, but to fill stomachs in countries around the world.
I think we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Congressman. I really appreciate this.
Tracy, anytime. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That was Congressman Glenn Thompson of Pennsylvania.
Objective, trustworthy journalism matters. We hear from listeners like you every day that Marketplace helps you understand the financial forces that affect our lives so that you can make better decisions. Now, this is your chance to be part of our efforts to raise economic intelligence across the country. When you support Marketplace today, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar. dollar for dollar, by our friends at the Candida Fund. As a nonprofit news organization, we're counting on your help so that we can continue to grow and keep getting better. Don't miss out on this chance to make your donation go twice as far. Become a Marketplace investor today in whatever amount is right for you. You do it by going to marketplace.org.
In just a few minutes, the University of Michigan will release consumer sentiment data for April. Looking at how consumers are feeling about the economy normally gives us a pretty good indication of how tight or not they might be with their spending. And the more consumers spend, the more the economy grows. Thing is, while consumer sentiment is at record highs, consumer spending is not nearly as strong. So let's bring in Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Chris, tell me about that disconnect between consumer confidence and spending.
Consumers stepped back in the first quarter, and there's two possibilities to explain that. You know, the first is that after Hurricane Harvey, there was a tremendous surge in spending as people borrowed money to start reconstructing, to start replacing furniture and cars. And just to put it in perspective, retail sales rose more than 2% in September, which is sort of the amount you usually see in a year. Spending in October and November was really strong, too. From there, sales went sideways for 3 months, and the level of sales basically fell back to trend. So the question is now, what happens from here? Do we see spending resurge in the spring, which is what the Federal Reserve told us they expect, or does that caution continue? And we're going to look at those consumer confidence numbers at 10 o'clock. Hopefully, that'll give us some clue.
And are you expecting a strong report?
I am expecting a strong report. It's not that we expect confidence is going to get much higher than it is now, because it's already at multi-decade highs, but it should hold at those levels. We are starting to see a little bit of erosion, particularly in people's sense of the current economy. They're still optimistic about the future, but maybe the gains aren't coming quite as fast as they were expecting.
All right. Christopher Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Thanks, Chris.
You're welcome, Tracy.
And in New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.